and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalzell. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to Pain in the Arsenal episode 7. This is a bonus podcast this week, seeing as Arsenal had a midweek game at West Ham. Henry is not with us again, unfortunately. Even more unfortunately, Josh is still here. He's still plodding away, spellbinding all of us with his optimism.
We'll find more of it today.
Yes. Perhaps not in the result. Arsenal drew 0-0 with West Ham on Wednesday night. It was rather dull, I think, would be my description of the game. It sees them slip to 7th in the league after Burnley's win yesterday. They are a point behind Burnley, Liverpool and Spurs, all on 31 points. So they're far from out of the top four race, but they are now 19 points behind Manchester City. And I saw a rather humiliating statistic that Arsenal are closer to the bottom of the league than they are the top of the league by a point. So they're 18 points ahead of Swansea and they're 19 points behind Man City. I guess it's that, isn't it? It's pretty disappointing. Depressing, underwhelming. Any lethargic negative word you want to throw in there, that's what it is. They're also now 8 points behind United, who, thanks to Romelu Lukaku finally scoring that donkey, thanks to a Romelu Lukaku goal, they beat Bournemouth. So they're now 8 points clear of Arsenal, which is getting to a stage that is a bit of a concerning gap. I think as long as Man City were a long way ahead of Arsenal, there was a little bit of confidence that Arsenal could still challenge for second quite comfortably. Well, now they're 5 points behind Chelsea, 8 points behind United. What were your initial impressions from the game, Josh, to stop me rambling on about the depressions of the table?
Well, I warned you before the podcast that I was going to be perhaps painfully optimistic. Obviously, I'm not happy with the result. It was absolutely not what we needed, and it just showed yet again that anytime you get your hopes up with Arsenal, it's a bit of a dicey endeavor. That said, I did find a lot of positives in the individual performances. You know, I was going through the player ratings as I was writing them, and I just kind of, first off, just do it off the top of my head, and then I'll go back and look at my notes. And I noticed after my first go-through that they were all remarkably positive. Like, after Southampton, I had a lot of really negative things to say about them, but individually, I think we did have a lot of really good performers, a lot of solid performers on the day. It's just that we couldn't score. It was baffling. I mean, when you create 22 shots, I mean, first of all, three were on target, which is kind of inexcusable because that's a really, really bad percentage. But
yeah, it's not
but
great.
22 shots, man, something has to go in, but not with Arsenal. No, not with Arsenal.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of those shots were, they weren't necessarily clear-cut chances. I think you compare those shots to the Manchester United shots, for example, and they weren't as high quality opportunities. Yeah. But certainly there were a few misses that were pretty inexcusable. Jack Wilshere's springs to mind immediately. Obviously it was on his wrong foot and the ball didn't really fall very nicely for him, but and he, to his credit, in a post match interview with BT Sport, he admitted that he should have got it on target. And he looked quite disappointed with himself, which I guess was nice to see. He knew it was a mistake. For me, really, from a broad perspective, the most concerning thing is Arsenal's away form. They've now played 9 games away from home. They have just 9 points, which, if you extend that out over full season, 38 points, that's relegation pace. So it's not good. They rank 9th in the Premier League table if you were to just take away fixtures. That's behind the likes of Leicester City, Burnley and Watford. And perhaps most worryingly, they've scored only 9 goals in 9 games. That's not good. That's the same as Stoke City. Free-flowing, high-scoring Stoke City. So it's not a great figure. And when you consider that 5 of those goals came against a really poor Everton team before Sam Allardyce worked his wonders. Scoring 4 goals in 8 away games is not good. They've now failed to score in 4 of their 9 away fixtures, that being against Stoke, Liverpool, a 0-0 draw at Chelsea, and a 0-0 draw at West Ham now as well. So really their away form is really concerning for me. I'm very worried about it, and they've been excellent at home. But how do you think Arsenal can turn the tide on their away troubles moving forward, Josh?
Oh man, that's a tough question, because it's not like, I mean, when you think about what's the difference between the home match and the away match, I mean, it's just the atmosphere, it's just the mentality, the mindset of the team, and how you change the mindset of a team like Arsenal that's had problems with their mindset for quite some time.
For many years.
It's just, I mean, that's the everlasting question that Arsene Wenger can't solve, whoever, you know, Alexis can't solve, all these people can't solve it. I don't know, maybe they get one good result from an away game, but then again, I mean, they went to Chelsea and that 0-0 draw was a good result, it was a very positive performance, and nothing, I mean, it's not like it turned their away form around, so I don't have an answer for that question. I think the best thing we can hope for is that maybe they go away and they get a big win somewhere, and go from there. Maybe we go into Manchester United and beat them somehow, and all of a sudden it all turns around. But I don't see any clear cut way that you can just teach this team to be stronger mentally.
No, and it's not as if they're not good players. Yeah. They've proven that they're good players. It seems to be a mental thing, really, which is, I mean, it's not surprising. But it's frustrating. Let's delve into this game in particular with a bit more detail. I guess the first thing to point out is Arsene Wenger went back to a back four. He did it in the Europa League a couple of weeks back. He said that it's his preferred system, but has used the back three as a distraction to provide a little bit more defensive security and a little bit of a change to his players. So he went back to a back four. Did you like it? Do you think it's something that he will continue to use moving forward?
I did like it. I think the main area where I really liked it was in the midfield. You know, a lot of the positive performers I had were from the midfield, and I think it was on the last podcast we talked about how to get the best out of Xhaka, and we talked about having him in the middle of a midfield three, and we did that against West Ham, and again the result didn't go our way, but I do think the midfield did benefit from that 4-3-3. Defensively, I was a little bit worried about Koscielny and Monreal. I mean, we didn't give up a goal either, even though we came damn close and tried really hard to give up a goal, but I think we should be positive about that back four. As far as where it goes from there, I'm not sure, because it's not like it was a huge conclusive step towards a back four. It wasn't like we just completely blew the socks off them. I mean, anything but. But I do think that it's something to kind of get excited about if we do move towards a back four going forward.
Yeah. I agree to an extent. I wrote in the 5 things we learned that probably the biggest issue with the back four is Arsene Wenger, to the extent that the reason why a lot of people and me and you are part of that people have wanted a back four is because it offers a greater stability in midfield. That extra third central midfielder, especially in the modern game, is so important. But Wenger seems to use it as an opportunity to throw another attacker into the mix. So I think yeah, he played Alex Iwobi in a central midfield position. I would have called it a 4-3-3 with Wiltshire and Iwobi flanking Xhaka, as you said. But really, Iwobi isn't a centre midfielder. He's a attacking midfielder, been moulded into a centre midfielder for a purpose. And I think, obviously, had Aaron Ramsey been fit, that would have been the role that Aaron Ramsey would have played, who is a more natural central midfielder. But I don't really think it offered that much more security in the midfield area. I think it offered a little bit, but I don't think it offered the enough for the payoff of having one less centre-half. And there were a few moments where Koscielny and Monreal were on a 2-on-2 against Marko Arnautović and Mikel Antonio, and they actually handled those situations pretty well, other than the offside goal, which was handled terribly, and they got blind lucky by the fact that Arnautović can't position himself properly in the box. But that started from, I think it was Antonio had the ball breaking at Monreal, and he had Arnautović to his left, and there was only Monreal and Koscielny between those two and the goal. And in past years, we've seen that, haven't we, where Arsenal, their fullbacks play as wing backs anyway. So there's no change there. They still only play with one holding midfielder, which is the same as the 3-4-3. The only difference is they have one less centre half, so now they only have two defenders defending against a counter attack. So I think it worked in theory, and I think it can work in theory, but I think Arsene Wenger needs to implement it properly. And I think it was nearly implemented properly tonight. There were moments where it looked very good. But there were also points where I was concerned that these vulnerabilities could be exposed throughout the year.
I did feel like it got a little congested at times too, though. I think there...
Yeah, there was a lack of width.
Yeah, I think there was an overabundance to central attacking midfielders specifically, because, you know, it did sort of look like a 4-3-3, or I kind of had it as a 4-3-2-1, and it just felt like Xhaka had four attacking midfielders that just floated around him, which, like you said, in theory, I like that. I think that's neat, but you're relying on these attacking midfielders to sort of be responsible to an extent, which... I mean, this is the first time we've used this formation and this combination, and it was bold, which I have to give Arsene Wenger credit for being bold, because that's not an adjective I often use to describe him.
No.
I do also think that had it been Ramsey and Wilshere on either side, I think it would have looked a lot better.
Yeah, and I think that is an important distinction to make.
Yeah.
And obviously, you can throw in somebody like a Santi Cazorla. Or if you're against a top team, you throw in an El Nene or something, who is a very limited player but does provide that greater security in midfield, even though I would be hesitant to see him in those games. It's something that is more adaptable to with a three centre midfielders rather than with just two centre midfielders. I think the lack of width was a real problem, especially given who was starting up front, and we will get on to Olivier Giroud, probably not too long in the show. Really, the width from Arsenal came from Maitland-Niles and Bellerin at fullback, which is fine again in theory, but you had Wilshere, Ozil, Iwobi, and Sanchez, and they were all taking up each other's space, and it was so cramped, and so many times they would look for the kind of incisive ball, and there was nothing on because it was just a swarm of legs from West Ham defenders and Arsenal attackers, and there was just nowhere to go. And it so many times they would end up passing it backwards to Xhaka, who would stand 30, 40 yards from goal and just look up, and there'd be nothing available for him. The other issue, I think, is if you do play a Wilshere and an Iwobi type player in midfield rather than a Ramsey, is you expose Xhaka without the ball against the counter-attack. And I actually think he did very well today, with recording this Wednesday night. I actually think he did very well today against the counter-attack on the break. But we've seen over the last 18 months that if there is a key weakness to his game, it's his immobility in covering ground. And without that extra centre-half, if you're going to play an Alex Iwobi-type player in the centre midfield, then there will be moments when Xhaka has to cover ground. And there was one moment in particular where Mikel Antonio very nearly absolutely burned him. And it could have resulted in a very difficult situation for Arsenal.
I was going to say, kind of to jump onto that, No, it wasn't Xhaka's best game. He hasn't had a really good game in a while, but I do think this is the best I've seen him defend in quite some time. You mentioned last time on the podcast that when he gives the ball away, he just throws himself at the ball, and he didn't do that today.
There was one instance in particular
where Koscielny got forward and Xhaka dropped back to take his spot, which gave me jitters already because he was a center back. But then, and then of course, he immediately passed the ball directly to a West Ham player. But then he sat back, and he ended up winning the ball back because he was patient with it. That really made me like obnoxiously happy. I was so thrilled that he had made that step.
He's learning.
And I just hope that that's something, because I thought he was an effective defensive midfielder on the day. I don't think he was great all around, but I thought he did his job very well. He still needs to clean up that passing, but I just wanted to say I do think he did very well for the position he was in.
No, I think he did. I don't think he will do for a season. I think there will be games where his in this system, if you don't have that security from a Ramsey type player alongside him, his immobility will be exposed, and that's not his fault. That's just the type of player he is, and Wenger has to admit that and diagnose that potential problem and build around that. Xabi Alonso, for example, is not very quick. Sergio Busquets is not necessarily very quick, but they have a team around them that allows them to play a very specific role at a very high level. And I do think Xhaka has that capability in him, but if he's used wrongly, he can be made to look very, very poor very, very easily. And I think while he did well against West Ham, I think if you play that game 10 times, I think on maybe half of them, he will pick up a yellow card, maybe even get sent off. He'll get burned by an Antonio or an Arnautovic or Lanzini or something like that. But on the day, I thought he was better than what we've seen in recent weeks. That's for sure. Let's discuss briefly. Ainsley Maitland-Niles started at left back. I don't think there was an injury to Sir Klasenac. I assume it's just general rotation, trying to keep him fresh for the remainder of the season. Maybe Wenger will have something to say on that. Do you think he did all right? I thought he did. I thought he was okay. There were moments where defensively he was a bit lax, but I thought for the most part he was decent.
Yeah, the one thing I always noted about him in whatever midweek match he was playing in was that he always looked so calm. And I think that's a really good thing to see from a young player, is he doesn't get frazzled. He never tries to do too much. He does get adventurous sometimes, but I don't mind that. And he carried that over to today. And it's not an easy fixture by any means to go into and play a confident West Ham at their home. And he didn't look shaken at all. He didn't look bothered. He did make a few mistakes, nothing detrimental, but I was very pleased with him. And, you know, his crossing, I feel like there were about 2-3 times where he was about a fraction of an inch away from connecting with Giroud's head. And I mean, after having to watch Bellerin attempt to cross, seeing Maitland-Niles actually put in some effective balls was nice to see from a fullback, because, I mean, like you said, the width wasn't there, but what we did get from Maitland-Niles, I mean, Bellerin wasn't bad on the day either, but they did, I think, you know, their crosses always just felt just like a fraction of an inch off, which, I don't know.
On the crossing, Arsenal made 23 in total, which isn't enough given the striker, and we will certainly get onto that. Of those 23, 9 were played by Maitland-Niles. And that was the most of any player. I think the next most was Sanchez with 4 or 5, if I remember right.
And he did well with them. I thought that there was...
I think there was an issue when Ainsley Maitland-Niles is your primary crosser to Olivier Giroud. But from Maitland-Niles' perspective, I thought he did all right. It still annoys me that he's playing out of position. He's clearly not a left back. He's right-footed. and he's very right-footed. So a lot of those crosses were when he came in on his right foot and kind of did an in-swinging cross, which is fine every now and then, but there were a couple of moments where there was one moment where Mesut Ozil played a lovely little pass into him towards the byline, and it was a little bit strong, and he didn't quite catch up to it, and it felt as if he hesitated a little bit because he knew he had to cut it back on his left foot, which he wasn't as confident in doing. And I feel if had he been left footed, he would have been more confident, I guess, in going for the ball, more decisive, and he probably would have just about kept it in. But again, that's not his fault. And you don't get to choose what foot you are. And I would like to see him play in midfield at some point. Maybe the Premier League might be too much for him, but I'd like to see him play in midfield in the Europa League or the Carabao Cup between, or maybe in the FA Cup between now and the end of the year. Knowing Wenger, we will never get to see that. But, you know, that's just Wenger for you. Let's move on then to the attacking essence of Arsenal's game. Firstly, Aaron Ramsey's absence was noticeable, was it not?
Yeah, although Wilshere did do a good job of covering for him, but Ramsey just has that indelible ability to just appear whenever he's needed and whenever you just need that extra person in the box. And it was absolutely missed. I mean, if anybody could have found space in that mass of bodies, I feel like it would have been Ramsey.
Yeah, and there was a specific lack of movement off the ball, especially in the first half. Thought Arsenal's best period of play was the kind of 15 minutes after half time, and they looked to be a little bit more free flowing off the ball, especially, and that's something that Ramsey will often provide from a deeper centre midfield position. He makes those driving runs into the penalty area without the ball, and that's something that I think was lacking, and it was noticeable. There was a very much a distinguished feel about Arsenal's performance, and not in a positive manner. Alexis Sanchez, and he was obviously subbed off for Lacazette late on. Do you think he played well? I know there's been some criticism of his performances of late.
I struggled with him because you look at his numbers and you think, oh, well, he drove this attack. But I don't know. He wasn't as sloppy. I think he did improve over his past couple games, which have been terrible. But I still, it just doesn't look like he's, I mean, like you said, there's a lack of movement off the ball. And I think that, I mean, not to pin all of it on Alexis, but I don't think he moves well off the ball. Unless he's immediately involved in that play, he's usually just looking to receive the ball and start something of his own, which doesn't work when nobody else moves. And I don't know. I wonder if he's just kind of in this zone where he's just going to do his own thing. You know, if it comes off, great. If not, well, he's going to leave anyway. And I was thrilled to see him get subbed off. That sounds bad, but I was just happy because, I don't know, maybe Wenger's had enough. Maybe because he had options to take off. He could have taken off, you know, a handful of other people, but he took off Alexis. And I, you know, it was only for a few minutes, which I think Lacazette should have come on sooner, but no, I was not impressed with Alexis, but I do think it was better than what he's been doing.
Yeah, I mean, on those numbers, he had a 78.6% pass accuracy, which is high for Alexis Sanchez. Anything above 10% is high for Alexis Sanchez. he created 4 chances, which is more than any other Arsenal player. He had 6 shots, which is more than any Arsenal player. And he had 2 shots on target, which is more than any Arsenal player. One of those shots on target being the free kick that was probably the closest that Arsenal came to scoring, maybe bar Wiltshire's sliced finish. I thought Sanchez played well. I mean, it's a relative statement, isn't it? Because Arsenal on the whole did not really click. So it's difficult to say that one attacker played really well or another attacker played really badly, because on the whole there was a kind of mechanical, clunky feel to their play. So it's difficult to kind of separate out the individual performances when as a team it was so sticky. But I thought this was a definite improvement from the weekend's performance from Sanchez. And hopefully it will be positive signs moving forward.
I wouldn't bet on that.
No, me neither. Let's get on to the elephant in the room then. Olivier Giroud, happy that he started?
Yeah.
In hindsight?
Yeah, I've been calling for him to start for so long. I mean, a lot of people had.
You must have been ecstatic when the team came
out. I was, because I thought there was some way that Welbeck would sneak up there instead. I was happy with how he did. Obviously, I mentioned on the crosses, I feel like there were so many times where he was just a fraction off from connecting with his head.
Mm.
And, you know, sometimes his knockdown play was a bit off, but he did set up two really good chances for goal. He set up Wilshere's.
Yeah, the header for Wilshere was excellent.
Yeah, and he set up another one. I don't remember who it was for. I don't think it ended up meeting them. It might have been for Alexis. I think it got cleared away. But, I mean, that's just... You know, I said early in the game, and you kind of made fun of me for this, but I said I feel like we're more dangerous when we have Giroud in the box, because any ball that you serve into the box is automatically a threat just because Giroud's there. If you don't have him there, a ball into the box is just kind of a blind hope for luck. And, you know...
Yeah, no, I do agree. I do agree. I think you commit yourself to playing a very specific style with Olivier Giroud as your centre forward. That's not necessarily right nor wrong. It's just the case. You have to play to his strengths. And I think the current crop of Arsenal players, especially in that midfield, do not suit his strengths. They're not necessarily great crossers. They're not the whippy, quick wingers who are going to get to the byline and swing loads of fast, dangerous balls across a six-yard box. They don't play with width. They require movement. And these are all things that Giroud struggles with. Again, that's not his fault. That's just the type of player he is. And I felt really sorry for him tonight, because I thought he was terrible, really. But I don't really think it was his fault, because he was playing a role that he just can't do. And it's that's not a surprise to anybody. Everybody knows what he can and can't do. It's just that Wenger seems insistent to put him in positions that don't allow him to play at his best. And like you said, when Arsenal do put balls into the box and he's there, he does provide a threat. He won seven headers tonight. He's brilliant in the air. He's outstanding at it. I think the thing that was most frustrating for me, other than the lack of movement, was his first time layoffs weren't quite as accurate as they usually are. And that's where he really separates himself from, say, like a Andy Carroll, who's also an excellent aerial threat. Is Giroud, with his back to goal, when you play the ball into his feet, his touch is outstanding, and his awareness in bringing others into play is really top quality. I think tonight it wasn't quite as sharp. There was one moment where he tried to lay the ball off for Alexis Sanchez to shoot first time, and he just drilled it at him.
Yeah, I remember that.
From about 2 yards away, and it was just really poor, and Sanchez wasn't happy with him in his mardy, stroppy style, as he always is. But there were a number of moments where his layoffs weren't quite as accurate as they usually are. I don't know why that is, but that's something that he is good at, and it was letting him down, which was a bit disappointing. But I do feel sorry for him, because he is a specific type of striker. It just doesn't fit at the moment. Even if Wenger will try and make it fit to whatever extent he will.
I feel like the solution is, because we've got the two styles of play with two different strikers, is if you put them both in there, and so many people have said just start Giroud and Lacazette together. It's worked for Giroud and Griezmann with France. And then you've got the quick striker that can do the things that Giroud can't, but you've still got the aerial threat for when you do want to play those crosses into the box.
Who do you drop then? Do you drop Sanchez?
I mean, personally, yes. But in terms of what I think Wenger could do, I mean, we talked today about how that midfield was too congested. It was like there was one too many bodies. So take one of them out. I don't care which one. Just take one of them out and put Giroud in instead, or Lacazette or whatever. Because then what you've got the back four. You've got Xhaka kind of sitting deep. And you've got three midfielders. It just kind of, you know, it can be Ozil, Wilshere, Ramsey. It can be Ozil, Ramsey. Any of those creative minds. Because we had too many creators and not enough targets. And I mean, you're still not going to get the width that you necessarily want, but I do think, I mean, you don't want to be entirely relying on those crosses. And, you know, Ozil and Alexis sent in 9 crosses combined, and Maitland-Niles and Bellerin sent in 13 combined. So, I mean, that's not enough for Giroud to do much with.
No.
But if you take that and add it to having Lacazette in there, then you've got 2 angles to your attack as opposed to just the one. And I don't know why. It seems like he's just so opposed to having them on the same pitch at the same time. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I mean, even when he brought Lacazette on today for Sanchez, he shunted him out to the left-hand side, didn't he?
And that's the announcers was, even said he's ran straight to the left-hand side. He didn't even stop to say hello to Giroud, or he just went straight to the left-hand side, and that was it. He was a winger.
Wave goodbye to Giroud as he went. He said, I'm not going to be seeing you for the next 10 minutes. I do think the Giroud-Lacazette partnership is one that could have fruit. My issue would be, do you sacrifice too much from the midfield? Because you would have to drop, either you drop Sanchez and then you need to find a left winger from somewhere, or you have to drop essentially Wilshere or Ramsey, one of those three attacking midfielders, like you said, and if you've only got Xhaka holding and you've only got a back four, not a back three. Are you sacrificing too much stability in the middle of the field just to get 2 strikers on the
pitch? Okay, here's what you do. You got...
You're listening, Wenger.
You leave Xhaka in there. You flank him with Ramsey and Wilshere, who, again, they're both pretty effective defensively. I mean, Wilshere on the day had the second most ball-winning plays next to Monreal. He won the ball back 6 times, and his tackling looked really good. And he's a left-footed player. So you let him... I mean... I don't think classifying Alexis as a left winger is necessarily... I mean, it's not like what he brings to the left wing couldn't be replaced by a Wilshere, because Alexis likes to cut inside just as much as everybody else.
Yeah. So,
and then you just let Ozil sit in front of them or just interchange with them. I've actually been impressed with Ozil. I think he played a much deeper role this time, and I think he did well with it. But between Ramsey, Wilshere, Ozil, you've got creativity. You've got multiple feet, for lack of a better word. You've got the right-footed Ramsey who can play on the right side, and he can get wide too. He has experience playing wide. I think that gives you the balance you need, and yes, you lose Alexis, but we're going to lose him anyway, so why not prepare for it?
Yeah, it's intriguing. It's not something that I would do. My one issue would be width. Especially if you're playing Giroud, you need width. I think, again, even tonight, you need to play Giroud, you need a natural winger. It's why Walcott and Giroud have always done well, because Walcott is, for all his flaws, and there are many of them, he is willing to stand on that right touchline, and because of his pace, he makes the pitch big. Just by standing there, he doesn't even have to touch the ball, just by being there, he makes the pitch big.
Are you saying that Walcott should start?
No, I'm not going that far. I'm not quite going that far. I think maybe we should start Walcott up front again.
Oh, yeah.
That was. No, we can't do that. I couldn't do it to myself. But I think the tactical kind of shift that Walcott would bring as a proper winger, that's what Giroud requires, and I don't think Arsenal have that kind of player in the squad. Sanchez isn't that player, Iwobi isn't that player, Ozil, Ramsey and Wiltshire, any of those players, Welbeck, none of them are that traditional winger. Now, if Arsenal go and sign Riyad Mahrez and stick him on the left wing, then absolutely bring Giroud in. Because then you've, or a Wilfred Zaha, or you know, a like a Mohamed Salah type, then brilliant, play Giroud up front. But for now, I just don't think his style suits those that are around him. And that's not an indictment on his qualities. I think he's proven his qualities time and time again. I just think it's a question of fit. And the rest of the team doesn't fit Giroud, or Giroud doesn't fit the rest of the team. I mean, it is a question that's going to run and run all year. I mean, Robert Pires came out and says he believes Giroud's uncomfortable because of his lack of playing time with the World Cup around the corner. I know, was it Didier Deschamps, or was it someone else involved in the French camp said they're concerned about Giroud's lack of league?
Two people have said that now. Deschamps said it over the summer, and then their assistant coach, I forget his name,
assistant coach, said it recently. Yeah, he said it a couple of weeks ago, yeah. Didn't he? So there are rumblings that Giroud needs to play, and I don't think he's going to get that at Arsenal. So maybe, you know, he was very close to leaving in the summer. I know Ronald Koeman bemoans his decision not to stay in the facilities at Everton. So maybe he leaves in January. It's not beyond the realms of possibility. And I think I'm right in saying does his contract expire in 2019?
I believe so, but
yeah, I mean, I think almost all of Arsenal's contracts expire in 2019. Yeah, it's a little bit concerning. We've got a lot of players who are in the 2019 window. I will stall while you frantically Google.
My computer is trying to put up with all the stats I have pulled up right now. 2019, yes, 2019.
So, I mean, he's only got 18 months left on his contract, so Giroud is putting himself in a position where he can kind of demand what he wants, really.
Honestly, if it's going to be where he just sits there, I'd rather just see him go, because, I mean...
For his sake, or yeah, for the club's sake, or both?
For the club's sake, I hope he stays. As somebody who really wants to see Giroud prove himself, which he's done countless times, and I want to see him in the World Cup, I almost want him to leave just for the betterment of himself.
Do you prefer Giroud to Arsenal?
No, of course not.
Are you
that
sure?
That pause wasn't because I was thinking, that pause was because I was making sure I heard the question right. I thought you were going to say, do you prefer Giroud to Lacazette? And I was going to have to think about it. It would be Lacazette. Be Lacazette. Let me say that.
Lacazette. But it's close, is it?
Yeah, it's closer than do you prefer Giroud to Arsenal. It's closer. It caught me off guard. I did not think about it. I prefer Arsenal to Giroud. But seeing as how Arsenal aren't benefiting that much from him anyway, then
he may as well
go. I'd rather see him go. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and actually, I do think Arsenal could probably get 20 million.
Oh, easily. I wouldn't. Yeah, I was going to say 30. That might be a bit much, but...
you would pay 50 million for it if you were Everton manager. You feel Sam Allardyce, like, Wenger, I'll give you all my players and 20 million for Olivier Giroud.
And Wenger,
and I only need one man. If it's one man, it's
and Wenger would say no, not that's too low.
Yeah, and then later in the window he'd accept a really low offer, like he's done many times before. Kieran Gibbs. No, we don't want 15
we
million.
Want
10 million? Yeah, we'll bite your hand off. Good old Wenger, eh?
He's a piece of work.
He is. Let's move on from the Giroud controversy. Again, it's something that will run and run this year, and I'm sure we'll have many more debates regarding his pros and his cons. Let's move on to Arsenal's defence, which is a little bit worrying. Monreal as a centre-half. We said in the last podcast when, assuming that it was coming relatively soon, when Arsenal go back to a back four, where does that leave Monreal? Because he's not a natural centre-half, and both of us shared our fears that him in a duo as a centre-half is somewhat worrying. I believe those concerns were vindicated on Wednesday. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, there were some times where Arnautovic made him look really bad. And if Arnautovic makes you look really bad, it's time to reassess what you're doing. Because I shouldn't sell Arnautovic short. He is talented, but...
Yeah, it's almost like Charlie Austin making you look really bad.
We may not see Mertesacker again, but I don't think... I mean, Monreal... I don't believe that numbers tell the whole story. He did win the ball back more than anybody else. But, I mean, there were some times where he would, and it worked out, where he would just bust forward to intercept the ball or make a tackle.
I was worried on many occasions.
And it worked, but I feel like it's a situation where after we played Elneny at center half for, I think it was like 3 games, people kept saying, eventually this is going to bite us. It's going to bite us, and it finally did. And I think that if we keep doing Monreal the way he's doing that, because he didn't have the pace to recover if he doesn't complete that tackle or make... No. And then it's just Koscielny with the bum Achilles versus the world. And I think the world of Koscielny, but in that situation, I'm not picking him to win that square off. So, yeah, I do think it's worrying. We'll have to see what happens when Mustafi comes back. I think he's close to being back. I think he was just doubtful for this match. He wasn't...
Wenger said he hopes that he will be ready on Saturday.
But then again, isn't Mustafi the same kind of defender who's going to do the same things Monreal did where he'll bust forward? Because I think he'll be more responsible because he...
I think he is.
But he's used to that position a bit more than Monreal is.
Monreal is positionally outstanding as a left-back. Yeah. And then he plays centre back in a two, and he is positionally terrible. I don't know what happens. It's as if his brain just can't handle playing centre half. I really don't know. There was one moment where I think it was Arnautovic had the ball down the right wing, and Monreal just charges out to meet him, and he did exactly what you would want a left back to do. Went out, got tight on his touch, and then Arnautovic played a little ball inside, and West Ham ended up kind of darting down the inside right channel, and Koscielny was in a 2-1-1 against, I think he was marking Antonio, and I think some other player was darting, maybe Lanzini was darting to the byline. I may have got all these players mixed up, but it did happen, I promise you. And the cross came in, And Koscielny was going to come over to the ball after Monreal was completely sucked out of position, but he didn't. He knew he didn't because he had to mark the striker who was making the run in the box. And the cross came in and Cech collected it because it was a poor ball in. But Koscielny was 2-on-1, and really a better team. Manchester United, for example, take you back to that Manchester United game, they would have scored right then. And that was purely because Monreal just gallivants up the pitch, completely abandoning any defensive responsibility that he has as the deepest lying defender, and then again for the offside goal. I mean, he had no idea where Arnautovic was, didn't have a clue where he was, and the only reason why it was given offside was because Arnautovic was stupid enough to not stand in line with Monreal, who was in front of him. And you saw both Monreal and Xhaka do the same thing. Now, if you're doing the same defensive positional movement as Granit Xhaka, that is not a good thing.
Although, I need to step in on defensive Xhaka here, because I think, if I'm thinking of the same play, he had just gotten back, and he looked over his shoulder and realized he was the furthest back, and then stepped forward to make Arnautovic offside. So I think he does deserve a little bit of credit for actually looking over his shoulder.
Maybe I'm being a little bit harsh.
He's proven in the past to not be capable of looking over his shoulder. So I'm glad he did this time. Maybe he actually is learning.
Yeah. Or look over his shoulder, see the danger, and not do anything about it.
Willfully ignoring what ended up being a goal.
Willfully ignoring, yeah. Yeah. My dad says that my granddad has selective hearing because he's going a bit deaf, and he chooses not to hear things that are... instructions like, you know, do the washing up or something. I think Granit Xhaka has deceptive seeing. He just chooses what he wants to see, and if it's something that means he has to defend and run back, he just pretends he's not seeing it. I think that's the role of Granit Xhaka at the moment. not great for me, a holding midfielder.
No, not quite.
I thought Koscielny we'll get on to the, I thought we'll get on to the madness of the past in the closing stages. I thought Kishoni was actually very good. He looks more comfortable in a two, that's for sure. And I think Kishoni and Mustafi can be a partnership that works well. I'm a little bit worried about their shared aggression to go and win the ball, a bit like you said, like they both like to try and nick the ball in front of opposing strikers. But for the most part, I think it's a pairing that can have success together. Do you think he played well, disregarding the moment of madness?
Yeah, I usually try to make sure that I don't let my view of a player's performance get swayed by one mistake. But that one mistake was...
It was terrible. It was
overall,
really bad.
Yes, I think he did well. You know, you mentioned him being more comfortable in that back four, and it kind of baffled me how he looked more comfortable, and I thought Bellerin looked more comfortable. But they're doing essentially... I mean, obviously there are differences, but they're doing essentially the same thing, especially Bellerin. I don't know why they can't make... Because Koscielny's been... I mean, for me, he's been one of the worst performers over these past few games. He's just been all over the place.
Yeah, he was bad against Southampton and United.
But then you throw him into a back four, and it's like, oh, yeah, that wasn't really me. I'm good now. And he looked, like you said, he looked more comfortable. He was more composed. There weren't any times where I was nervous, really, from him. He just exuded confidence until that last play, which you can go ahead and talk about that now.
Yeah, let's get on to it. I actually think Koscielny wasn't the biggest culprit in that moment, personally. I mean, the pass was criminal. It's completely inexcusable. I do not know what he was thinking. It felt like I was playing Sunday League football again. That's what I felt like. I was Monreal receiving a pass from my centre half partner that I did not want whatsoever. It was not good. For me, the biggest culprit was a trio of people, was Monreal, Bellerin and Petr Cech. After the ball kind of squirted off Monreal's legs, didn't it? And it kind of sat in the penalty area. And all three of them were the closest to the ball. Like, they were the three closest players to the ball. And they all just stopped. It was easy. It was a bad pass, but it was easy to deal with. Cech had to pick it up, or Monreal or Bellerin just had to clear the ball, and none of them did anything. The commentator on BT Sport said Arsenal were at sixes and sevens, which is obviously a wonderful cliche, but actually it's completely true. They were a mess. They were all over the place. I had my head in my hands, going, "What in the world is going on here?"
I don't think my heart beat for the entire from the moment Koscielny gave it away. I don't think my heart beat. Until I hit the crossbar, and then I breathed again, and I was back alive. But
the worst thing was that it was very reminiscent of the same pass that Koscielny played against United to Kolasinac. Mm-hmm. It was almost the same ball that obviously resulted in a goal. So the lack of learning from lessons, which is something that Arsenal have an incredible ability to do over many many years, they're just brilliant at replicating the same mistakes. So it looked the same. It was it's quite difficult to talk about because it's so just so stupid.
Yeah, I don't get how. I mean, I drew the diagram of how we were set up when Hernandez received the ball, and like you said, they were all kind of equidistant, and they all looked at him. And they just kept looking, and nobody moved. Mm. They just kept looking. Mm. And it's like everything just stopped except for the ball, except for the shot. And I don't know. I mean, maybe that just comes down to nobody wanting to take charge.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. It felt like everybody was on edge, and they were nervous about making a mistake. So nobody was willing to be the leader and the authority of the situation.
I mean, I feel like, though, in that situation... I don't know. I hate to pin it on any of them because they were all equally at fault. But I feel like it kind of has to go to Cech because Cech is the senior player. He's been here before. He should know what to do in that situation. But I mean, again, there's no reason why one of the other two couldn't have stepped up either. Everybody just watched, like you said. It, it is really hard to talk about because literally nothing happened. They just watched.
Yeah, and we should give credit to Mark Noble. It was a wonderful little kind of reverse pass into Hernandez to set up the eventual shot. And the clearance itself was straight to Mark Noble. I think it was it Monreal who cleared it? I think it was Monreal who cleared it, wasn't it? And it was a bit of a kind of hacked, panicked clearance when he realised that nobody was running towards the ball. He went straight to Mark Noble. I think I would probably put the most blame on Cech as well, because if you're a keeper, as soon as the ball comes into a position where you can get it before any other opposing player, as a keeper who's commanding your area, you should shout, "Keeper's ball, everybody go away from it," and you come and rule the situation, and you come and control everything. And you put the onus on you. And Cech could have done that, and all he had to do was run out and pick it up. It wasn't like it was a fearsome cross, like it was literally just on the floor. So I would probably put the most blame on Cech, but certainly Monreal and Bellerin and Koscielny did not cover themselves in glory whatsoever. Cech also made some rather odd decisions to punch the ball on a number of occasions, and I just want to contrast it to, I think it was a free kick, wasn't it, in a wide area that it was almost like a corner, right at the end of the game, and a ball came in from a cross. It was basically a corner, but I think it was a free kick, not a corner. And Cech came out and he claims it and he catches it and he's really commanding and he completely dominates everything. And then he goes and clears the ball and he deals with it perfectly. He does exactly what every Arsenal keeper has never done, which is command his area from across. But that was, it felt like that was the only time he did that, because every other time he was flapping all over the place. Exactly what Arsenal have sacrificed a shot stopping ability with Cech. He isn't as good a shot stopper as even as a Chesney or as real top level keepers, but he is experienced. He is a leader. He is a good communicator, and he is an excellent controller of his penalty area, and I think that's why Wenger has continued to play him, and that's why I would continue to play him as well. But against West Ham, that was not the case at all. He looked he looked like a 19-year-old goalkeeper, really, is what he looked like. It was a bit concerning. Would you agree?
Yeah, the way I explained it in my player ratings was, I felt like every time he was called into action, it looked like he was just waking up and just seeing what was happening, and then he just did the first thing he could do. But I mean, like you say, he's usually so commanding, so I don't know why he seems so panic in every situation except for that last one. It didn't make much sense, and I don't know, he's, you know, people have had complaints with him these past, this year especially, but there was a bit of a mumbling last year too, that he's kind of losing his top game. I think, you know, that's always going to happen. I mean, he's been in the game for a long time, but to his credit, these past few games he's been good. It's just, this one was just, it was weird, and I don't know. Even the offside goal, I felt like he didn't read it quick enough. It didn't amount to anything, so it doesn't matter. But it just seemed like he should have reacted quicker once he saw where Arnautovic was. But
yeah, I mean, I think in general he's very, very good.
Absolutely.
There have been people calling for him to be dropped. Like, they used the penalty stat against him.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, okay, he's not very good at saving penalties.
Nobody's really good at saving penalties.
Do you know what I mean? Like, give it. Simon Mignolet is good at saving penalties. That does not mean he's a good goalkeeper. Give me somebody who can catch a cross over somebody who can save a penalty. And he isn't as good a shot stopper as he used to be. But there's a compromise to be made, and he's well worth that compromise most of the time. Yeah. Tonight was just odd. It was very weird. I mean, Arsenal are an odd club. they rarely do what they should. And check. I mean, I guess credit to him. He was just probably following orders from Wenger. Saying, right, be weird, fellas. Off you go. Do the unexpected.
Do the Arsenal way.
Shock the world. let's end our review of West Ham's game, because we've been talking for nearly an hour now, which is somewhat depressing. let's end it on Jack Wilshere. You gave him man of the match in your player ratings. I said he was Arsenal's best player in the five things we learned. I did temper that that statement by saying he was the best Arsenal player, but that's not really saying much. No, it's like saying you're taller than Santi Cazorla. It's not especially impressive. But I do think there were a few moments, especially where Wiltshire really showed his kind of ingenuity in midfield. There were a couple of first touches
that were
beautiful to watch. I as a footballer, I love watching him play. Do you think it is possible to play him on a regular to semi-regular basis in the Premier League specifically?
Yes, if you enact my plan of the 4-3-1-2.
Josh's grand
plan. I'm lobbying for this plan to go into effect because I thought he was fantastic. I mean, he completed tied for the most dribbles on the team. He was not dispossessed a single time. He did lose possession a few times, but he never had the ball strictly taken from him. I mean, he didn't have a shot on target, and he didn't create a bunch of chances, but like you said, he was making things happen in the middle, and I don't think it fully covered for what Ramsey brings, because he doesn't have that same ability to just pop up, but I don't think Ramsey has the ability that Wilshere has to really to make those first touches that just, I mean, those first touches he would make, it kind of solves the problem that Arsenal had of their counterattacking is so slow. When they want to start to attack, it takes so long. When Wilshere
There's no impetus.
Yeah, when Wilshere does a first touch like that, the attack is automatically kick-started, and it seems like everything is flowing
tempo.
In the right direction.
Absolutely.
He just needs more people there to pick up that tempo with him.
I don't want to bring this back to Giroud, but I guess Wilshere requires movement around him, and Giroud isn't that player. And again, let's not pin it on Giroud, because nobody was moving off the ball. Sanchez was static. Ozil was playing in a slightly deeper position. I thought Iwobi was pretty static off the ball as well.
I think Iwobi and Wilshere were playing a very similar role, which I don't think was conducive, because I don't think you need two pivots, and they were both kind of playing that pivot role.
No, I mean, I know Pep Guardiola plays it with Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva.
Wilshere
but
and Iwobi are not
they
De Bruyne
are,
and David Silva.
No, well, exactly. You can do it with De Bruyne and David Silva because they're, you know, two of the best players in the Premier League right now, best players in the world right now. And when you have players at that level, you can play many creative midfielders together because they're that good. But Arsenal don't... They're not even close to that calibre of player. I would love to see Wiltshire play more often. My dream is to have him and Ramsey midfield flanking Xhaka. I would play Sanchez, Ozil, Lacazette front three, whereas you would bring in the donkey. sorry, that was harsh. That
come
was harsh.
On.
Sorry, Giroud. I do like you. I do like Giroud. I've had enough of Arsenal talk for now. on other things that I like, David Moyes. What a manager. I said a few podcasts back that I always felt sorry for David Moyes and I wanted him to do well at West Ham. I didn't want him to do well against Arsenal, obviously, but 4 points against Arsenal and Chelsea, and they only just lost to City the week before. I mean,
yeah, that's
what a
and
man.
He's done it without Chicharito. Hasn't been playing that big of a role, and he's their big summer signing. He's doing it with the guys that were... I mean, Arnautovic, too. He's been kind of...
Yeah, and actually, I thought West Ham played very well tonight.
They did, yeah.
I thought they were good. I think they deserve a lot of credit. So, good on you, David Moyes.
There is something special about a happy David Moyes. He just has such a good, happy face.
I missed that. I loved that Everton team. I really did enjoy it. The kind of talking about 7 or 8 years ago. I thought it was a brilliant team to watch, and I really liked him there. So I hope he does well. I hope he does well. I prefer him to Sam Allardyce, put it that way. Right, before we go completely mad, we will take a brief interlude. Oh, no, actually, before we do that, is there anything else you want to discuss on the Arsenal-West Ham game?
Nah. I guess just to throw Ozil, because we didn't talk about him much, I thought he was...
Yeah, go
ahead. He was pretty good. I do think there were times where he slowed it down and he didn't need to. But I do think he was good. We're seeing him use his strength a lot more, which I didn't think he really...
He tried hard.
And there were times where he was shielding the ball. And I think the times where he did, he ended up losing it. But the fact that he was able to hold on to it for a while, because I'm used to seeing him back into like a Wanyama and just go flat on his face. He's
flimsy.
Yeah, but he wasn't this time. You know, it makes me think back to when he recovered from his injury. I believe it was in 2015. He came back. He looked like a completely different person. He looked stronger, and he did make a point that he bulked up during his injury. But I feel like the Ozil we've seen, I mean, this is 5 games in a row now where he's been consistent. He's been good. I feel like this is that Ozil, that same Ozil that we saw when he first came back from his injury, where he was really, really good. And now it's just a matter of, I mean, supposedly a contract's coming, so.
Yeah, and I think against Southampton, I think he was probably Arsenal's best player as well. Which, again, it isn't saying that much because Arsenal weren't very good. But he showed, he just looks a bit different. Just not necessarily in what he's producing in the quality of his play, but just in the way he's doing it, he just looks, there's a different feel around him. And I actually think he might sign a new deal.
Yeah, you know, I think back to all,
which is mental.
Yeah, I think back to all the times where people said, well, you can't judge him by his body language, he's just one of those guys. But I think that's bullshit now, because we see, like you said, he looks different in the way he's playing, but to me, his facial expression's different. He looks determined. He looks happy. He looks he looks like he cares, which I'm not used to seeing from him. I was trying to teach myself to not care what Mesut Ozil's face or body looked like when he was out there. But I feel like that was wrong. I think we had it right all along that something back then was bothering him, whatever it is, doesn't matter, because right now he looks like a different person. Yeah,
because everyone would spout that, oh, he tops the running charts. Yeah. He tops the running shots because he's an intelligent player and he's always on the move, not because he cares. Yeah. Like, just virtue of running a lot. It doesn't mean, like, no, you stick Mo Farah in the middle of the team, he'll top the running shots. I never really bought that at all. But he just looks different. I don't think he's playing better or worse than he used to, but there is a different feel about him, and it's nice. It's nice to see. Nice to see a happy Mesut Ozil, and hopefully he stays.
Yeah,
hopefully he stays. I've changed my opinion on this on a nearly weekly basis. I think I would rather Ozil than Sanchez stay right now. But if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said the opposite. And if you ask me in 2 weeks' time, I'll probably say the opposite again. So right now, I want Ozil to stay more than Sanchez. But you know, this is Mesut Ozil that we're talking about. Let's take a brief interlude. When we come back, we will discuss Saturday's game against Newcastle, which now, I think it's probably fair to say, would you say it's a must-win game?
I mean, they've all been must-win, but yeah,
it is. And Arsenal have won none of them. Good old Arsenal. So we will see you after the break, where we will preview Saturday's game against Newcastle. See you in a minute. Welcome back. We are now set to preview Saturday afternoon's game against Newcastle United. Thankfully, it's at home. So Arsenal's terrible away form can be put on the shelf for at least a few days. It's at home, and it's a Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff, which is the first one in a long, long time that Arsenal have had a Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff. That's 3 o'clock UK time. For those who are elsewhere in the world, work it out yourselves. I don't know your time zones, so sorry, guys. You're on your own on that one. But it's a Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff for us Brits. It's one I'm looking forward to because Newcastle are in terrible form. Since the start of November, which is 7 Premier League games, they have amassed a total of 1 point, which was a 2-2 draw away to West Brom. They are just coming off a 1-0 loss to Everton, in which they allowed Wayne Rooney to score. Who is playing with a Zimmer frame. They've now slipped to 16th in the table. They have less points than Stoke. They have less points than Brighton, less than Huddersfield. They have one more point than Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace. They have one more point than West Ham. I mean, they are terrible. And they have a goal difference of -10. Contrast that to Bournemouth, who are only 1 point above them, have a goal difference of -5. So they're a bad team, and Arsenal should be winning, especially at the Emirates. So how are Arsenal going to lose on Saturday, Josh?
Oh man, they always find a new way. I guess, you know, I'm looking, I kind of had a soft spot for Newcastle recently. I'm not really sure why. It might be because DeAndre Yedlin's an American. I got a lot of pride there. I mean, and they have Isaac Hayden, who Arsenal guy never got a chance, and he's been doing pretty good. How are we going to lose, though? I think...
Because we will lose. We will find a way.
Yedlin will bust down the right-hand side. He will cross it in, and he will find Boney, and he will head it in, and we'll lose 1-0. We'll take 40 shots. And not a single one of them will go in.
Yeah, Darlow, who has recently replaced Rob Elliott, he'll play like Stretch Armstrong.
They always do.
Yeah, they
always
do. Although, to be fair, Adrian, we're recording this Wednesday night, Adrian didn't. I know he made that one save from Sanchez, but that was about it.
Speaking of Stretch Armstrong, I don't know if you saw Fraser Forster against Leicester, but he was certainly not Stretch Armstrong, left all of his powers against Arsenal.
Oh, dear. And I think... I've not seen the goal, but per reports, Darlow had a mare for Rooney's goal in their loss to Everton as well. So
he's primed to snap back into form.
Yeah, and he wasn't great. They lost to Leicester 3-2. He wasn't great there. Riyad Mahrez's shot was from quite a long distance, and it wasn't really in the corner. Certainly, if that had been an Arsenal shot, he would have saved it. But with it being Leicester, he couldn't quite stretch far enough. So, I mean, this is a question tempered by their quality a little, but who were you worried about, or who were you most worried about in the Newcastle lineup?
Mikel Merino kind of worries me, because our midfield has shaped up lately, but he's one of those guys that I think can cause us trouble because he's big enough to keep the ball and he's creative enough to do something with it.
Yeah, and he also has the ability to play those kind of 30-yard passes that start breaks and that get Arsenal on the back foot, doesn't he? Yeah.
And he's good in the air, which is always a threat to Arsenal.
Yep.
And Matt Ritchie worries me too, because he's kind of like... He's got the work rate of a prime Alexis Sanchez, where he just never gives up. I mean, you look at their assist tallies on the year, and Matt Ritchie's on my fantasy team, so I consider myself an expert on Matt Ritchie. 5 assists on the year. Nobody else has more than one. Yeah. And he's one of those guys that, even if you hate a team, you enjoy seeing him play because he loves his football. He's always working so hard. And again, I'm an expert. I watch him a lot. So, he does worry me. Yeah. But
And obviously, he's on set plays, which is why he's doing so well for your fantasy team.
And
his delivery is good. And Newcastle are quite a big team, especially if they play Mbemba at fullback, who is a kind of adopted centre half, and he's quite tall. Obviously, Marino in centre midfield is a big lad. If they happen to play Mitrovic or Joselu up top, they've got a good size about them as well. So set plays, Arsenal and set plays are somewhat rocky relationship. So definitely, Matt Ritchie's delivery could exploit them in that situation.
I just realized that I said Wilfred Bonny was going to score against us, which is tragically wrong because Wilfred Bonny doesn't play for Newcastle.
No,
I meant Joselu.
Well, yeah,
I got a little carried away there.
I mean, this is Arsenal. I wouldn't be totally surprised if Wilfred Bonny did actually score for Newcastle. I genuinely would be tempted to put a quid on it. for me, pace always scares me. Especially against Arsenal on the break. So if they play Christian Atsu out wide or Ayoze Perez, even Dwight Gale through the middle, if they have a bit of pace on the break, that would be what scares me. But really, this is the type of game that I think if Arsenal get an early goal, they could carve Newcastle open to the tune of 4 or 5 goals. If they don't get that early goal and it goes into the second half 0-0, then things become a bit nervy and it's a very different game. But if they go in at the break 1-0 up, 2-0 up, I think they should be relatively comfortable. Let's move on to what Wenger will do. Again, this is a completely stupid question to ask because we have no idea what he will do. Probably start Olivier Giroud at centre-half. Firstly, do you think he'll play 4 at the back again? Do you think the 3 at the back is done for now?
I don't think it's done for. I do think he's going to play 4 at the back mostly. I mean, it depends on what Mustafi does. I think if Mustafi's healthy, he goes back to the 3 because...
With Monreal and Koscielny.
Yeah, assumedly. I mean, I don't know. These short breaks just make it even more irrational to try to predict what he'll do. But I do think, assuming Mustafi's out, that he'll stick with the back 4. I think you'll see Kolasinac back in there. And all the people you'd regularly see, of course, I guess you can't regularly see people since this is only our second time using a back 4, assuming we use it. But, I mean, Lacazette will be back in there. I don't think there'll be as many changes unless we do revert to that back 3 with Mustafi back.
Yeah, if he plays a back 4 and Ramsey isn't fit, which I think is probably the most likely outcome, does he play Wiltshire and Iwobi again as the kind of double pivoted midfield?
I hope so, especially with how well Wiltshire did today. Although it did seem like Wiltshire got tired at the end against West Ham. So I wonder if he'll let him go as long this time, especially on the short break. I mean, and it's dicey to play him, 3 days after he played so hard for 90 minutes? I mean, that's... You'd hate to see something happen.
I was surprised that he wasn't taken off, actually.
Which I think might be a hint that he won't play against Newcastle, because I just can't imagine...
Here comes El Nene. Here comes the El Nene train. It's the coals are getting warm.
Although, if you are ever to play Mohamed El Nene, I feel like... I'm going to eat my words for saying this, but I feel like Newcastle, I'm going to do it. I feel like Newcastle would be a good place to do it because you're getting, I mean, the thing about El Nini, he's very good at being just good at just about everything. He's very good at being a stopgap option. And if you're desperate for a midfielder and you have absolutely nothing else to go to, you can rely on him to at least not make any stupid mistakes.
Yeah, he'll give you a solid 6 out of 10. I mean, he's probably the best sideways passer I have ever seen. Really, he can have options behind him, in front of him. He can have options all over the place, and he will still go sideways. It's a genuine talent. it's quite astonishing. I do not want El Nene to play. But to be honest, I think you're right. I think if Mustafi isn't available, I would be surprised if he goes back to 3 at the back. I think you'll see Kolasinac come in at either left wing back or left back. I think Lacazette will replace Giroud. There were mentions that Lacazette's groin was causing him slight problems, which is why Giroud started and why Lacazette was so late to come on. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. As of speaking, I've not heard or read anything from Wenger, so maybe that's something to keep an eye on over the next few days. I know he had that, obviously, the when he wasn't expected to play against Manchester United, so maybe it's just some after effects of being quicker to return than initially expected. So perhaps Lacazette may be on the bench again, but I don't know. That's something to keep an eye on over the next few days. I mean, this is Wenger we're talking about, so we really don't have a clue what he's going to do. Score prediction. We don't need to spend too much on this game, I don't think. In theory, it should be a comfortable win, which means Arsenal are going to lose 1-0. What's your score prediction? Come on, optimistic American.
5-0.
Is that it? That's all you got?
I mean, I think back... You made a good point, too, and I think back to the Huddersfield game, and I think... Again, I don't know how many times I've said this before. I say this probably every podcast. I say when Arsenal, when you count them out, that's when they're at their best, which it's bullshit, but I say it all the time anyway. But at some point, they will prove me right, because at some point they will have to turn it around because they are good enough to do it. It's just you never know when it's going to happen. But damn, you can't get a team more ripe to be destroyed than Newcastle. They're not good right now, and... I mean, I think a lot of how many goals we score comes down to how many people we have at full fitness, because it is a short break. And if Lacazette does have a groin problem, well, that obviously hinders us, too. We might see Chuba Akpom coming in there somewhere. that was a joke. We're not really going to see Chuba Akpom.
I would always like to see it. Just
why not?
Yeah.
It's not like he could be much worse than Welbeck at finishing.
Yeah. Theo could start up front.
Oh, Can we root for Theo to start? I'm going to root for Theo to start. I'm going to pick him up in my fantasy league, actually.
I would be surprised if he starts. Was he on the bench tonight? I don't know.
Oh, that's a good question.
Because I know he's not been on the bench in recent...
Callum Chambers was on the bench today, ahead of Rob Holding, which I thought was interesting.
Maybe we can start Callum Chambers up front.
Let's see. Well, what's your score prediction?
My score prediction? Either it will be a 1-0 loss where it's 0-0 after 60 minutes and Newcastle score a ridiculous goal, or Arsenal will win 3 or 4-0, or maybe 2-0 and it becomes boring in the second half. I don't know.
Well, you've picked every score in the book now.
It could be 1-0 Arsenal. That's a score I have not yet picked. I will say... I'll say 2-0 Arsenal. They'll go in at half-time 2-0 up, and they'll kind of shut it down, and the second half will be really boring. That's my prediction. Have you found out whether Theo Walcott was on the bench?
He was not, but I think he was on the doubtful list for the match for some problem he had. I don't know what it was, but I think
doubtful of talent was
that was probably it. It wasn't doubtful knee or doubtful leg. It was doubtful talent.
Oh, Theo, he's a bit of a whipping boy on this podcast. I feel a bit sorry for him.
Yeah, it's a shame. I'm glad though, because I think I've always bashed him on our side, which that's mean. I haven't bashed him. I've actually come around lately. I think I'm becoming a closeted Theo Walcott fan.
I know. It feels weird. He'll be ahead of Giroud in the pecking order if he's not getting.
No, that's not going to happen.
Is there we're done with the Newcastle game now. As a final question, is there an Arsenal player that you like more than Olivier Giroud in the current team?
No, I mean, it's always been Giroud and Ramsey. It was Ramsey for a while, but then when he started flirting with Barcelona, I kind of let Giroud take over. I've always liked Giroud. I don't know, I feel like it's kind of my... I don't know what the word is that I'm trying to think of right now, but when everybody was bashing him, I thought, you know, he's not that bad. I'm just going to stand up for him.
I think it's your calling in life. to stand up for Giroud.
jokes aside, I've always told myself I want to be the person that writes Giroud's biography. Like you got Zlatan's book, I Am Zlatan. I want to do the I Am, like, I Am Ali or I Am Giroud.
We can... I am Giroud's biggest fan. It yes, could be your autobiography. That could be the sequel.
That's all I've done with my life is I've become Giroud's biggest fan.
Yeah, the Giroud proponent over here. Right, I think we are beginning to ramble. It's quite late in England, so I think I've hit that kind of hysterical tiredness where I'm not really concentrating on anything I'm doing. So let's wrap up. I will ask one final question. Is there anything, any topic of Arsenal discussion that you want to talk about? Or non-Arsenal discussion, even?
Schalke won today.
Schalke won. They're up to second now, then. Is that right?
They're in second behind Bayern Munich. And yeah. So I had two computers running at once, one with Arsenal, one with Schalke. And
wow.
Yeah, it was great. And then there was one point where Schalke blew a two-goal lead and Arsenal was starting to surrender possession. I was like, this is it. I'm going to watch both of them lose at the same time.
Yeah. Has that happened yet?
No, they usually don't play at the same time. So
I assume you've had extremely depressing Mondays when both when both Arsenal and Schalke have been pummeled at one point or another.
Yes, however, Schalke's on a 10-game unbeaten streak now, so I haven't had to worry about that in a while.
Gosh, Leon Goretzka.
Arsenal, however,
Leon Goretzka.
He's hurt. He's not even playing.
Oh, he's not even playing. Oh, that shows my knowledge of German football right there.
Weston McKinney is, though.
Weston McKinney, the state's hero, along with Christian Pulisic.
He did miss arguably the biggest sitter I've ever seen.
It was
tough, but he did miss it.
Oh, dear.
Anyways,
oh, dear.
This isn't a Schalke podcast.
No, it isn't. I must say, though, the best football game I've ever been to was a German football game. Live, so German football is getting things right. It was in Hamburg, and it was on a stag, and it was brilliant, far better.
Ooh, I do
far better than England.
I do want to bring up the video assistant replay because I've seen three times in the past 4 days where video assistant replay has done things I didn't even know it could do. Two were against Schalke, actually.
Here we go. That's why.
No, there was when they were playing Mönchengladbach. They gave up a penalty. It was a clear penalty, but there had been a foul that wasn't called against the Mönchengladbach guy
in the build-up.
Yeah, and after awarding the penalty, Schalke went and told the ref, "You missed this foul." And the ref went to video replay, saw the foul, took the penalty back, and moved play back to where that foul had occurred, which I thought was quite strange.
Mm.
And then there was another instance where he straight red carded a guy. I believe he was playing for RB Leipzig, and he went to the monitor and changed his mind, got the guy back from the tunnel, changed it to a yellow, and sent him back into the game.
Gosh.
So, interesting stuff.
Do you,
I wonder...
Because I do like VAR in theory. I was always skeptical about the goal mouth, the Hawkeye thing, whatever they use on the goal line, because to make it fair, you have to bring in video technology for everything, because if you know, for example, if you had a foul in the build-up to a goal that was given because of goal line technology, but the foul wasn't given, then how is it fair to give one thing based on technology and not the other thing? So has it been working as something that can influence every single decision on a football pitch?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because there are some times where they just blatantly don't use it. Like there was the Revere Derby between Dortmund and Schalke. Mm. There was a goal that Aubameyang scored with his hand. It was so clear, and they didn't review it, and they just counted it. It didn't make any sense. They later ruled out a goal that Schalke scored by video assistant replay. It was kind of inconsistent, and from what I've heard, it's been a bit inconsistent as far as why they decide to review. I mean, from what I've understood, they review when there's enough of a complaint that they should review. So if you don't complain enough, they won't review it, which to me seems kind of odd.
I mean, the way I would bring it in is take the NFL system or the American system and say the coach has a certain number of challenges. And then so he sees an incident and then he has 10 seconds to tell the fourth official, I want to challenge the decision or non-decision that was made by the referee, and then the referee stops the game, goes and checks the decision, then either the coach wins or loses his challenge, and then the game restarts depending on what the decision is. I guess you'd have to be a bit careful, because let's say there was a foul or something, and then the coach realises that his team's a bit vulnerable on the counter-attack, so just challenges it to stop the game, then...
Yeah, that's... I mean, I think the way the German league, the Bundesliga has it, is solid, because the ref can get a call from this headquarters in Cologne where he has to just stop the game, and they wait until there is a stoppage. He won't...
Right, so I they mean, wait I, until never... until the ball's gone out of play or something.
I'm 90% sure, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a question of if you prefer that, or I listened to this interview with Mark Klattenberg where he talked about how he sometimes as a ref just wanted to make the game more entertaining as a ref.
Yeah, I mean, he is a odd fellow.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just depends on what you think refs are. He tends to think they're, as he put it, they're part of the act on stage, which I don't know if I agree with that.
No, I don't
that's
agree
for
with
the
that.
Players to do. I mean, that's why refs can't talk to the press. They can't do any of that. So they're not part of the game. They're there to make sure the game
happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well, that was interesting VAR discussion. I'm sure Arsenal will be screwed by it in some way or another in the future. There's another guarantee of life, death taxes, and Arsenal being buggered by refs. I'm being buggered by themselves most of the time at the moment.
That mostly, yeah.
Yeah. Let's end it there then. Thank you everybody for listening. Again, you can find us on Twitter. Just search "Pain in the Arsenal." You'll find us. Find us ranting about something or other. We're at paininthearsenal.com as well. If you see us on iTunes, please give us a rating and review. Tell us what's terrible, tell us what you like, tell us how stupid Josh's optimism is. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week after the inevitable loss to Newcastle. Goodbye.